bulking up with the 100% whey protein.
Yeah.
That's it, baby. What dimension?
All the guys swimming. I'm gonna lock us in there.
All right.
Oh, actually, I need more than that.
Let me get in.
Yeah.
That's a good word there.
Thank you, sir.
Every day's an adventure. That's it.
Sit here.
You just talk to people all day?
Advising? I mean, No. I mean, I have different responsibilities, different days, you know, different things happen. You know, there's. I mean, to give you just one, I'll give you one shocker. You want a little shocking moments of.
I like shockers.
You like shockers.
No, is she gonna be able to figure out how to get through this?
So, got a number of an individual to call who's a wealthy guy. You know, so. Part of my job is to connect that to new donors. So I have a whole methodology actually I learned from somebody else. So I have an assistant who makes a phone call on my behalf. The individual's name, he works for Goldman Sachs. He's not one of those Goldman Sachs millionaires that we mentioned weeks past.
He is or he isn't?
He is. In other words, he became one of the managing partners 5 years ago. So you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. So I make the phone call. In other words, the phone call is made. He calls me back. Play a little telephone tag. I speak to the guy. His name is David Karlebach.
David Karlebach.
Okay. Sounds Jewish. Sounds good.
Yeah.
So David, so I say to him, David, I got your number from another person in the office, and he mentioned to me that you're very involved in the Jewish community. He said, Rabbi, to tell you the truth, no. In fact, I'm not Jewish. But the reason why it might confuse me, because my relative is Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach. Have you heard of him? I said, most certainly have. Rabbi, let me tell you a story. I'm named after the chief rabbi of Cologne, Germany. But I'm not Jewish. I said, David, go on. Tell me this one. Apparently, his father was one of, I think, 7 or 8 brothers. And for a reason that's not entirely clear to him, and his father has since passed away, his father married a Protestant woman. And the family sat Shiva and did not speak to him. He then, and they had, children, actually twins, and but that was his father was in, shall we say, a persona non grata in the family. And then you had so he would visit. He visited his family, the relatives some in Israel. He spent time with Shlomo Kalbach himself directly, he was discussing an idea, and because the Kalbach come from Germany, so they're a combination of Lithuanian and German. So that's a very formal element. So that's why Shlomo actually really went, as far as his hanging out with the hippies was rather a large break from the family tradition.
Wow.
I mean, he has that background. But he adopted a different methodology to in his work in outreach starting in the 50s. So here I was talking to a guy who was a cousin or nephew of Shlomo Kalbach, one of the most renowned outreach rabbis, period. And he himself is not Jewish. And he's named after the chief rabbi of Cologne. In other words, the family, the Kalbach, they weren't just regular guys, they're not only regular rabbis, but they were chief rabbis of cities. So it was a very prestigious family. And here I'm on the phone talking to him, one of the Goldman Sachs millionaires, named after a chief rabbi, who in fact is not Jewish. He in fact also went ahead and married, and of course he married a non-Jewish woman, and he has children, and that's it. So that whole part of that, so here's a guy named after a chief rabbi of a Gadol Bisrael, who is a complete goy, l'chol deos, and that's it. That whole part of that family is snipped off. I didn't want to, there's nothing really to pursue. I left it over. I said, look, if you come, he comes to New York all the time. I said, you come and you want to go for lunch, fine. It's very hard to fundraise aggressively with non-Jews.
How did you get his name?
I have people who help me with that.
I just want to say one thing. I find it interesting, the storyline is that here's a guy whose father married out of the faith.
Yes.
Has a Protestant wife.
Right.
They have a young son. They give birth to a boy.
Yeah.
And this Protestant woman and this guy who's married out of the faith name the son after the chief rabbi of Cologne.
Right, grandfather.
That's a weird story.
Right, because no, because that was his grandfather. He's named after his grandfather.
Okay.
But it's still weird.
And I'm saying, okay, that was his grandfather. It's still weird.
No, it's weird.
It's also weird that, you know, he didn't break off ties, that he saw fit.
No, so the family did not, nor they didn't view it as his fault, so they were open and they invited him. They were very warm to him. Because he wasn't his fault that his...
I'm just saying that his father named him after him.
Yeah, that's very, you know, there's a whole...
He kept him in the line. You'd think that maybe there'd be a split, that these things get ugly, and then, you know...
Well, there were some issues there, obviously, because, to marry, coming from that kind of esteemed family, to marry a shiksa in that era was rare. I mean, you know, he wasn't able to really reconstruct all the detail. Like he said, he didn't get much, you know, spiritual nourishment from Judaism. I mean, that's an understatement, certainly, but there's whatever. So that was,
I went through school with a kid. We were good friends. He was the rabbi at Arminian in high school. He's sitting in Gemara class. Well, you know, he's a modern guy.
Right.
When he was like 20-something, he found out he wasn't Jewish.
Wow.
His mother, like some, you know, like they were like Spanish or something, and their mother really wasn't Jewish.
She was faking it.
And the guy wasn't converted to Judaism. It was really like a weird thing.
So question was...
Jose Goldberg.
So question was... Now, that's of course an interesting question. That's of course every guy's fantasy. if you were confronted with that situation, what would you do? Would you convert? Now, most guys would say, I would convert, but in a couple of months. I got a couple of things I got to attend to. I want to explore some things now that luckily is not an issue at all. So what did he convert? He found he wasn't Jewish? He was out the door, baby. There you go. They got your answer right there.
Every guy's fantasy.
I can let you know. Everybody always more
fantasy. He was a character. He was a funny guy.
That's pretty funny. All right, so
we're all waiting.
Okay, for here's a question for tonight. Question like this: because since you guys are in the realm of dating and you know, and ultimately marriage, God willing,
ultimately the end of it all.
That's it. So questions like this: what quality? What do you think is the highest quality that you can possibly find in a female? Now I'm going to put it into it, excluding, you know, the obvious necessity of, like, you know, attraction, compatibility. You know, taking that off the table. Talking about the pure quality. What is the ultimate quality that you're looking for? I'll take guesses.
Are you going to devote a week to the former, though?
What?
The former question. You're not taking this week.
What?
Yeah, the attraction.
Well, I'm just saying that's a given.
Okay.
But I mean, I'm not, for example, you see, I mean, I'll just prove it luckily. The thing is very simple, that the fact that although there's an institution called shlicha, so you have agency and you can give power of attorney to a fellow Jew to do certain halachic activities for you. Okay? Especially all financial transactions. So, for example, you can empower somebody to give your wife a get. Okay? All right? You cannot empower somebody to give another woman the ring and do the kinyan kedushin on your behalf. Now, from the framework of actual, the ten halacha of actually the kedushin, the actual transaction, that could be done. But the Gemara says we don't allow it to him because Shema Tiskana, you know, Baila Baina. In other words, that perhaps he's going to see her. You know, he can't do a mail order bride. You know, I mean, talking about the, you know, and just based on hearsay. Because he's going to marry her, then he's going to see her, and he's going to find her to be absolutely repulsive, and you can't have a relationship like that. So the given, it's simply unnegotiable point.
Okay.
So there's not really nothing to talk about. I mean, I don't think anybody in society says, yes, I'm going to marry somebody who I'm absolutely not attracted to. I don't think anybody ever had that problem either. And it's luckily not allowed. So you see, there's absolute.
It's a case where that substitute a little bit, you know, like the girl's like so beautiful that he's willing to, you know, say, no. Saying like he could
spit it out.
She's also beautiful. Like, right. He wants to be with her, even though she may not be the best girl for him.
That happens all the time.
Oh, okay. Is that?
Oh, of course.
Is that? I guess.
I'm not dealing with that. I'm not dealing with that. That's of course. Another issue. But and we've touched upon that in passing.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about. Putting, you know, assuming that the, you know, taking off your little checklist here. Attraction? Check. Compatibility? Check. You know what I mean? Alright, you got that down, alright? You know, assuming you could order this. What other quality would be critical to have? What is the best quality to, if you can get it, you're like in the money.
She expects nothing. So anything you do is...
So you're saying a woman who expects absolutely nothing.
Low maintenance.
So that really is not a positive quality. It's really a removal of a negative. She's not hocking you. So that's not a positive quality. That's a removal of on your case to do stuff for you or get her stuff.
Right.
First of all, that's impossible. No. but even that thing it is, that's not a positive quality. You know what I'm saying? Doesn't bug me, is basically what you're saying. You know what I mean? That's what you're really, that's not really a positive quality. You see that point? It's not...
I meant like what you said, like a couple of times bigger here.
That's true. That's also, that's very...
Attachments like the money and like... You know,
right, I understand.
They're all country.
But that's true, but that's still not a positive.
They're all country mentality.
Right, that's still not a positive. It's still a removal of a negative. In other words,
like eating.
Right.
Contentment.
Removal of a hunger.
Right, I mean, you're saying, so, you know, she's, you know, yeah, add to that, you also don't want a, add to that, you also don't want a person who's a drug addict, and you also don't want a person who is an alcoholic, but that's not
that's true.
But it's not a positive.
That's good.
I was just identifying certain negative qualities, which are so ubiquitous, so common, so regular in our community that you need to just be sure that you just you avoid that. The court, just like you'd avoid an alcoholic and avoid a drug addict, you should try to get the person who is in the realm of materialism is the lowest maintenance you can possibly realistically get. That was the point there. But it's still not a positive
right.
quality. I'm asking a harder question.
Right.
Assuming you get that, you know, we're talking about, when you're talking learning Torah, you're always talking about the ideal. Obviously, in life is not the ideal. You're going to have to, you know, you're not going to get that, either in yourself or in others. That's it. But it's still helpful to know when you're going out there. Well, what would be the ideal?
Okay.
Opportunity for growth. What does that mean? All right. What does that mean? What do you mean by that?
That when you look at the girl, you can see like a real opportunity to grow. I mean,
what does that mean?
And
okay, that's too vague. I'm not going to let you get with like, you know, vague platitudes. If I ripped out, picked up a Hallmark card, oh, we can grow together. I mean, that's, you know, it might have some valid meaning, but I want to know exactly what you mean by that phrase. It's not
that
really.
The girl is going to continue in line with helping the man. In terms of
what does that mean? Be very specific.
That she's in line with him learning and being a solid Jewish individual.
Solid Jewish individual. How you grow? Okay, those are good things. But can we distill an excellence even which really underpins all of that? And that's part of it, certainly.
You're saying it's deeper.
Yeah, of course. I'm not going to come here with I'm trying here to come bring out to bear a chiddush, not something like, you know, obvious.
Solid individual.
True. All right. What is the mark of that excellence? How do you know that you got it? I'm going to put it like that. You know, you open up the box, you see what's inside. How do you know that you got it? Or do you know, or do you send it back to the manufacturer? You know, just if I may use a metaphor. What are the symptoms of that? What are the signs of that? Sammy, any ideas? Any what positive quality? What would be that positive quality?
I don't know. Guys are coming to mind.
Right, she's not this, she's not that, she's not that, she's not that, she's not that. True. But what's the positive? So she has no positive, she's just, you know, the absence of frustration. Because all the qualities she has none of the qualities that I find irritating. And it's also, is that inherently, you know, I mean, let's flip it around another way. What, you know, going back to our last time we got together and we talked about in the world of celebrity gossip, what's excellence in a female in America? Let's just flip it around that way. Let's see what their qualities that they're looking for as they push the proverbial cart through the shopping center. Smart. Hold on, smart. People really want smart?
Yeah.
Okay. In other words, a woman that got a 1600 or now called a 2400 in SAT, that's a very important quality?
No, it's not,
now. I'm asking you, tell me.
Is Paris Hilton smart?
Alright.
I don't know, is she? No.
Okay, so fine. So then you take that one off. So smart, not important. So what is important?
Looks.
Look.
Social standard.
Okay, so the looks. Okay. What else?
Personality.
What do you mean by personality? So what does that mean?
That she's fun to be with.
She's fun to be. What makes her fun? So she's like entertaining? She makes good jokes?
Do activities together.
Well, that's kind of on the vague side. What do you mean? Be more.
You know, like go to the park together. Like the baseball game.
Right. Enjoy the same activities that you do. What other qualities are deemed important?
Money.
Money's always good. You're looking for the powerfully rich, beautiful woman who is entertaining to be with. Is that really not so simple? Would a regular guy want to be dating Paris Hilton or Britney Spears or any of those women? Not so simple, because I think they would be a little bit intimidated, because they're like, here she's Mrs. Powerful Maher, and he's like, who are you? Who's that guy? You know, he may be made to feel the complete loser. You know, just it won't even get off the ground.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It would be emotionally too deflating for the guy. Right. To be feel like a complete, like the loser. You know, you're once in a while these celebrity women, like, date their backup singer. Right. And everybody's like, well, what's up with that? You know what I'm saying? That doesn't fit into the whole image there.
Britney Spears.
Right, you know. But he had a little something, you know, that's why he had a little, his own career, a little stickle of his own career. And he since moved up a little bit on the Maharama there. right, he's nearly a god in his own right, not quite. You know, he's not merely the moon that really reflects her greatness, but he's merely a small sun in his own right.
Right.
So, okay, so basically they're looking, those are the basic qualities, they're looking for, you weren't really, in other words, is it just per se looks, good looks? It's more than that, it's not really being more specific, it's not really a... More, isn't that it, that's it?
That's a question.
No, it's more than that.
It's a question, what is attractive about celebrities?
Our question is, in our society, what are the important elements for a guy to find in a modern relationship?
So what are you talking about celebrities
before? He was identifying some of the qualities. He said, oh, she's rich, she's prominent, you know, well-respected in the society, in the community. truthfully, it's more than that. I mean, be more specific. It's not only that. She's basically he's interested in having a woman who will be an excellent sexual entertainer, sexual toy for him. You know, let's cut. Those are all instrumentalities to that goal. Is that pretty much it? That's that, right? That's the A. The B being, of course, you forgot about something that she can also cook. You know, she can run the household, provide food, right? Right. You forgot about that. You know, that's important.
That's sexual.
Right, and of course, so it's basically three. So she's well liked, good in bed, and C, an excellent chef. And four would be like to manage the house well. Those four things. Basically, the guy would like to marry, simple put, is the prominent prostitute chef. It's what really the average American is looking for. Right? Is that basically it? A prominent prostitute chef is pretty much the American dream. So, intelligence is only so important to do all those activities well. That's what the average guy is looking for. Unknowingly, that's the American dream. I mean, I'm sure there's some variation, but that seems to be the guts of it. Is that what you say? That's pretty accurate. All right, so what's wrong with that? Taco. Hey, it's pretty taco. That's pretty good.
That's
a
sensual design.
Okay.
Okay.
And also, forget about a prominence different. Or he walks out with her, and she's on his arm. That gives.
There you go.
Right. She's a tool of his stature, of his greatness. Mm-hmm. Provides him with two sensual pleasures perfectly, and removes all kinds of and in his entertainment palace, part of his home, is perfectly organized to achieve that goal. Mm-hmm. That's perfect. Mm-hmm. You didn't mention any of those qualities when we asked. What's the best quality of a female? You didn't really mention that.
What did I say?
You said something like growth,
solid
Jew. Well, you know, what's that? How do those differ?
I think it's important that she does have all those qualities.
Okay. I'm not. Those are important. You know, I'm sure if I go on to JD, I'll say seeking, you know, well respected prostitute chef homie. Those are not qualities that see out there.
Those are four inches, so there's gotta be a little bit more, you know.
A little more. Those four and
well, those were givens, you said, though.
What?
You said those were very givens.
No. I didn't say that. I said attraction and compatibility are necessary things. These are not that. Because a prostitute, in other words, part of the problem is there's an inherent paradox here. I'll just give you one idea. See, the prostitute is inherently a problem because since she's skilled in this sexual art, the way she can get skilled is through experience. The problem with experience is that do you really want to have sex with a woman who's had sex with 70 other guys? So first of all, there's two concerns. One is, you know, just the medical disease factor, A, and B, the idea of the satisfaction of having a unique relationship is clearly not possible. You know what I'm saying?
What about if we're going to eat guys?
Well, it's hard to be very experienced. You know what I'm saying? That's a short training run. But, you know, you understand there's inherent conflict in the very fantasy. Forget, given that fantasy is true, the inherent fantasy itself is not possible.
I don't know how much it is about the prostitute. Because he could.
Yeah, I don't mean he wants a person, a woman who has slept around with a lot of.
Right.
Talking about but a woman who has certain excellences. But most arts. All art, simple syllogism. All art require, all excellence in art require mentorship and apprenticeship. In sexual art, sexuality can be an art. Therefore, excellence requires mentorship and apprenticeship.
What can you do?
But that's not the same thing. I mean, that's, I'm sure he's, but that's not really the fantasy. That's not.
But don't you see there's like a real fantasy with like virgins?
That's inherently the contradiction. That's an inherent paradox. Because the virgin, by definition, does not know anything, does not really know how to conduct herself, because she never really, this is her first experience. So therefore, how well is the person going to be playing golf on his first day out on the
Not that well.
No. How well is a person going to be on the first day playing basketball? Not that well. How well is a guy going to be on the first day doing trading on the floor? Not that well. Every art requires, in order to excellence, requires mentorship and apprenticeship and practice. Those three things. There's no way around it.
I assume that there were people in the world of ours that are probably looking for that sexual proficiency. And I'll tell you the truth. I'm surprised to hear, let's put it like that, that the world large. I understand people are, you know, interested, have a sexual fantasy,
right,
and they look at a woman and want to have a sexual experience with her. But I was not aware of the fact that that's part of what they're looking for in a mate is sexual proficiency.
Well, they want to have a good time. In order to have a person a good time, it has to be a person who knows what they're doing. In order to know what they're doing, she has to be experienced. But you know,
you're saying
they're not conscious of the inherent contradiction.
But are they actually aware of the fact that they want to find a woman who's sexually experienced? Or
they want her to have the excellence that comes from experience, but they don't want to know about the experience. You know, they want to have an impossibility.
I understand.
You know what I'm saying? They want the virginal prostitute. It's an inherent possibility.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Right. They want the woman who's going to be, you know, engaging in the bedroom. But the problem is, the only way this can happen is really with a level of experience and mentorship and apprenticeship and practice. Those three qualities, you're not going to have that. In other words, they want the impossible.
He marries her, and she'll gain that experience over a period of time.
Right.
I understand that, but that's not the fantasy. We're talking about what the unrealistic person, the average American, wants is that which is inherently unattainable in every single category. Right. They're not really conscious. It's not just that they want somebody who is good looking. They want her to be, you know, they don't want her to be sitting there on bed like you know, a frightened deer in the headlight. Right. Right. Which is inherently unconscious. Isn't that a problem? It's a problem. But even before I mentioned that, you didn't mention any other term because you were looking for an additional quality. You use the word growth. What does that mean? And how would a woman or a wife in this particular case be a source of growth? You're responsible for your own growth. What does that mean? So she'll be your Rebbe?
No, but she's
gonna give you shear every morning.
She's in line with Your striving of
Oh, so you want a yes man?
No, I mean,
so you want a person who's I dream of Jeannie, the loyal, what's her, you know, what they call her? I mean, you know, what was her? She was the dutiful maid servant there. Remember, you know, I dream of Jeannie.
Mm.
What's her name? Sabrina? Mm. Well, I forgot.
Samantha?
No, that's another one. That's Bewitched. That's Bewitched. Bewitched. You know what I'm saying? So what do you want? You want a person who's a yes man? Oh, whatever you say, honey.
No.
Wonderful.
You can do someone with constructive criticism.
Constructive criticism.
Someone that's in line with where the two of you have the same same path of Rosh Hashem.
So you want to marry the tzaddikus, whose whole focus in life is Avos Hashem.
Why isn't that the ideal?
I said, what are you looking for?
No, me. That's what I'm saying. Well, I thought you said the ideal situation.
Yeah, the ideal quality. What's the best quality to get?
Something that makes you feel good.
Oh, so therefore we went back to this. So we'll go back to the other. So therefore, one feels good is the experienced, what was it?
Prostitution.
The prostitute chef, the...
prominent.
Oh, yeah, the prominent prostitute chef homemaker.
That's not like a real feeling of self-worth.
Okay, so then what is, so what's missing from that? You got everything, you got the social status, mm-hmm. you got the sexual enjoyment, you got the food satisfaction.
Recipe for depression.
Recipe for depression.
Yeah, basically. Recipe for depression and divorce.
Boy, that's pretty harsh. Why?
What is that? I mean, guy fulfills all the things and he realizes, he doesn't have anything.
Right, so then what he's looking for. So what's missing from the whole puzzle? Are you saying the word growth? Oh, so you want? So she should be a Rebbe?
No.
David,
no,
time to learn.
No.
Dave, come on! You're late.
Growth where the two of you could grow together.
What does that mean? That's a nice phrase, and it's said all the time. What does that mean in reality? What does that mean?
You're now a team, and that you're really one unit.
Okay.
And
how do you become one unit?
His theory changes every 5 seconds.
I'm working on the same theory. Just like.
He's refining it. Give him some time here.
Yeah, yeah.
He's talking it out. Sam, you're it's easy to sit in the bleeps over there and say, "Hey, that theory sticks."
Thanks, Benny.
Meanwhile, I don't hear much coming on this side and say, "Well, he's out there struggling."
He entertains.
Right. You like
him.
You like him
smart enough to not say anything and just enjoy it. Watching him squirm around over there.
Over here, removing my knowledge.
This is Yahweh Chachmashkita. Very good. All right. So instead of letting you, wither in the, wither on the wind there, or we're going to give you a little help.
Thank you.
Really, to take it's a short story in the Tanakh. I think really has in this story, you will see the preeminent quality that. It would be make the most excellent woman, and therefore the woman you want to be married to. Okay?
Okay.
That's what we're going to look for. So, Tanakh here. Oh, we need some stories. You may even remember it.
Did you close your thing on the top, your window? Raining out. You?
Yeah.
You closed it? Because it was open a few hours ago. Okay.
All right, this is a story in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Chaf Pei, 25th chapter. I'll just read to you guys in English. Okay, so basically the backdrop is that David HaMelech is still on the run from the enemy, the current king, which is Shaul. And he's still, a man with a band of merry men who are his support team. Okay? So it says there was a man in Maon whose business was in the town of Carmel. And the man was very wealthy. He owned 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. And the following happened once at the shearing of a sheep in Carmel. The man's name was Naval. Okay? And his wife's name was Abigail. And the woman was intelligent and beautiful, but the man was difficult and an evildoer, and he was a descendant of Kalev. All right, so that's the scene. So far you have two characters. You have Abigail, the wife, who the pasuk calls Tovat Sechel, intelligent, and Yifat Torah, and beautiful. And you have the man, Naval, like the word nivel is disgusting. The Meforshim explain his parents didn't call him Naval, but he got that name later in life by his associates. Now, he didn't call himself Naval, but everybody behind his back called him Naval, alright? Because he was a disgusting son of a gun. Alright, so David heard that he was in the, David heard in the desert that Naval was shearing his sheep. So David and Malach sent 10 guys. And he said, and David said to him, "Go up to Carmel, approach Naval, inquire how is he doing in my name, and say, such success for life. Peace be upon you. Peace be upon your household, and peace be upon all that is yours. So, and now I've heard that they are hearing for you, and your shepherds stayed with us, and we did not shame them, and they did not lack anything all days that were in Carmel. Ask your attendants, and they will tell you so. Therefore, let my attendants find favor in your eyes, so we have come because of your celebration. Please give whatever you can for your servants and to your son, to David. Basically, like this, as is going to come evident later in the story, Nabal and his 1,000, you know, his 3,000 sheep and his 1,000 goats were out in the wilderness with their shepherds, and David and his army protected them. But he's still on the run, so he needs supplies. So in a nice kind of way, he's basically telling them, you know, Nabal, it's... That was basically in a nice, diplomatic way he was asking, you know, for, I was good for you, you've done good for me. No thinking, no serving. Basically, he was asking for some reciprocity. All right? Is that clear? Let's see how it goes. So, David's servants come, spoke in accordance to all the words to Nabal and David's name, and then they stopped. Okay? They didn't say, they said what they had, and then they waited for a response. Okay? That, by the way, is a rule of fundraising. Whenever you ask for, this is not just a fundraising, but when you ask for a request, you pause. Use the power of pause. So they just open the source in the Navi that the request involves in his court, and you don't say anything until he responds. Whoever talks first loses. Okay? That's it. That's also, you're sitting with your boss asking for a raise, you say, Mr. Thompson, I deserve a raise. You know, I brought in an additional $500,000 worth of resources because of the Sigma deal, and as such, I'm really would like to hope count on you and the company to provide me with a $50,000 bonus, you know, bonus time. And whoever talks first loses. And people hate silence. So the emotion is to talk. But then you can see that you're not really confident in your request. So you just say the request, and it replies.
Is only when it's a request?
Yeah. That's certainly, it's called the power of the pause or using the silence. These are two known sales techniques, which of course, the open in the process.
How can you use the silence to
whoever talks first loses.
It's really like you ask a girl out.
Same thing.
You want to go out?
Any request.
You say, all right, we're going out, and then you just wait.
No, that's not an ask, that's a sea void. You can't tell them, we're going out. So you say, Jennifer, it's great talking to you. Would you like to go out this Thursday? Would you like to go out this Sunday good to get together again? Girls hate silence.
Are there any particular...
More than guys.
It's true.
Even more.
Hate it more than
guys. Are there any particular faces you should try to hold up when you...
Don't smile.
Smiling.
Right. No, just say, and give like, you know, flat face and look them in the eye.
Why is that, by the way, that girls hate silence more than guys?
I don't know if that's really true. I'll be honest. That's just my anecdotal. That's just my anecdotal sense. I don't know. I think it is true.
I got to do some just 30 seconds of laughter here. He's saying this is a joke. So he's gonna go out and he's just okay. I'm gonna implement this. I'm gonna ask Jennifer out tonight. Everybody, be quiet. I'm calling Jennifer. I'm being pretty sensitive. Hello, Jennifer. I deserve a raise, don't I?
Yeah, you had to do that. You couldn't hold
it
in.
Sorry.
It was such a low-hanging fruit you just had to grab for. It was so there. First of all, you see from David's thing. First of all, he approached them with their cover. There's, first of all, you cannot do a bakasha without the rapport being there.
Well, sure.
So he has developed rapport. That's why there's a lengthy
Right.
And he doesn't even ask directly. So he's emotionally working with them. He obviously knows he's not an easy guy to get something from, so therefore he says, he gives him shevach, he tries to emotionally get him on his side.
You can just go to any girl.
No, that would be you're gonna get your face smacked in. No, because you're in two different emotional places. In other words, when do you know to ask? So the when to ask is when the rapport is at the point where that level of comfortability, where it's a natural thing. Now, obviously, the goal is to get there. That's a process. Or you'll start talking about something extraneous, and then you'll talk something which is a little bit more personal. And then you'll get the conversation going, and then get to the point where, the best request where it's clearly a natural development of the conversation.
It's very smart. I never really thought about that. It has to be extraneous. A little bit more personal.
Yeah, you can't start right from. First of all, her radar's on full alert for guys incoming forces there. So you got to start. You can't just start right. 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 She is. You go sink your sub. You can't start like that. It's obvious not. That's why, the joke of a guy comes up to the girl in the bar, a beautiful girl in the bar, and says, "Hey, you look familiar," or something like really cheesy. Why b'chefta do those cheesy lies not work? Because by definition, there's no emotional rapport being built.
That's good.
By definition, you're in two different places. I'm teaching you how to pick up women.
This is the Torah Seduction by Rabbi Penny.
Well, it's just it's not because you're missing something. Asking a girl is not because you're making a logical error, because asking for a girl is not a category in its own right. It's an expression of the junk header of requesting. In other words, don't look. Don't. You're making a mistake that asking girls out to go, to go out on a date is its own phenomenon. What you learn from the world of learning is that there are no particulars that exist in its own right. There are a few categories. So let's give an example. Is asking a girl out a category, a logical category in its own right, or it's a special case of all requests? And all requests. Individuals have some common denominator, such as one. You cannot ask a request until there's an emotional rapport being. There's not a rapport there. If there's no rapport, you cannot do a request. There's no identification. Why should you? Because you've not yet challenged. All right, guy goes through. Why does the guy get the big blow off?
It's bad.
It's bad because the guy goes up to a girl on thing and says, "Hey. Is it just my imagination, or have I ever seen you somewhere?" Or 10 of the classic cheesy lines, you know what I'm saying? Why are those not 99 out of 100 times not effective?
There's another
four being done. Another four. You need a match here to start the conversation. It has to be from the most extreme. The more extreme you can get, the better it is. You're sitting there and say, "Do you know what time the Met game's going to be on?" There's any kind of mantra to engage in conversation. Very far away from your goal.
What about like confidence?
It's too obvious.
Too obvious.
You're looking great tonight. First of all, she will like that, but she will know, her radar will detect, the guy's coming in way too hard, and you're gonna have to, get deflected off. Unless she's a slut and she doesn't care. I'm saying it depends. Psychologically, the most normal people are going to be, they're going to have it. So you have to, they'll feel uncomfortable. They're putting an uncomfortable position because now that's not really in the given situation. So you have to, start from the most extraneous.
So let's say it's the off season. That's how I'm playing. So
whatever. I mean, I want to give you 1,000 examples. Anything which is, I'm giving you a general principle, you have to find your own example. Is that you have to be something given the situation which is far removed from the area of dating and relationships and sexuality.
Depends on that thing.
Right, you just any matter
to get conversation, which is legitimate, and then you could just start. Then you make another move of rapport.
Eventually, dragging it back into the.
The goal is to get her talking.
No,
that's not really artfully done. It's, you know, whatever. I'm saying that, no, because then, because if she's talking and you're listening, that's the greatest way of rapport. Because you're listening and she's talking, therefore you're automatically machshaving her.
Making her feel important.
Yeah, because you're listening to her. And everybody likes to listen to.
Right.
That's it. And then, when there, then as a natural comes, then you can say, by the way, it's really great talking to you, even though you said four words. And then, but, you know, by the way, would you like to get together for dinner on Sunday night? Pause. That's me.
Sometimes it's not that easy to get the girl to talk. Like, you know.
So you have to think, you have to be a little bit of a cockum. And also, what kind of situation? Like in a party where there's 500 people there? Are you talking about that kind of situation? What kind of situations? When?
At a party.
Parties are hard. How big of a party? And I'm saying that makes a very big difference, because if it's very loud and, you know, it's not conducive for conversation.
Right.
Especially since they're nervous, they're in a hunker down mode. That's why they're talking with, like, there's like five girls in a circle. Mm-hmm. How are you going to bust in?
Yes.
It's very difficult. But there are tricks. You know, I'm not going to get that's a sheer zone, right? I'm not. But I'm just going to. I just picked up. It is. Not. You're viewing it as a special. What I'm trying to show you is that you're seeing this as that being a whole world in its own right. And I'm telling you, no. There's one category of how to really asking is really an activity that can flow naturally once there's a given relationship. The question you think is, well, how does one develop a relationship? So the developing rapport. Well, how do you develop rapport? Developing rapport, there's certain universal symptoms, steps, that's it. You pick up a book on networking. I mean, it's the same thing. It's a lot of networking, it's the same thing. How do you forget about a girl for a second? Let's say you're trying to meet a guy. Let's say you want to do real estate. You want to talk to a guy who you want. Let's say you want to, I don't know, let's say you want to do a deal with a guy. And he owns 100 buildings in Manhattan. And how do you, you know, and you see him there sitting there. What do you do? Hmm. Same problem.
Yeah.
He's sitting there. You want to talk to him. You can't say, hey, can I do some business? Right? They call it a complete schmuck.
Normally, though?
What?
What if he just like said?
No, because why should he?
Right.
Because he has no motivate. Why should he do anything with you? Oh, so you have to. So that's why you start schmoozing. What's going on? You talk about something totally extraneous to business.
No, I'll be more open to listen because he identifies with you now. He views you as like
you're his friend. People do business with their friends.
Right.
Okay. This is all right. But I'm just saying. I'm just pointing out that the attendance of first of all, see, David, you see clearly. I'm just, you know, as you see right now, do not fully trust his soldiers to necessarily have all the diplomatic nuances. So he instructed them exactly what to say, and he probably told them not to say anything until he replied. You know what I'm saying? I'm assuming that not only did he tell him what to say, he probably gave him some. And also, Yaakov Avinu told exactly these guys. Let me see another thing. There's a universal here. That the great men, understanding the art of, we're talking about now, of diplomacy, of political connections, relationship building, recognized that their lower, their workers were probably not going to be adept in these skills, so therefore he had to give them exactly the script and exactly what to do. And don't deviate from the script. So Yaakov told his guys as they brought stuff to Asa. They're simply not able to do it. It's an, you have to understand, it's an art. All arts require mentorship, apprenticeship, and practice. If you don't have those three, you're not going to be able to do it well. How can a guy become a top golf player? You need a mentor, the coach. Apprenticeship, you got to listen to everything the guy says. And you got to practice like crazy. That's how you're going to do it. Assuming you have the basic talent.
Well, I'd say that the learning curve is definitely different depending on what situation you're talking about, though.
What do you mean?
Saying, like, I'm just saying, like, in any given area, yes, it takes time, but, like, I would say, you know, it's definitely harder in, like, some areas, you know, to a certain level, and it takes, you know, a certain number of years to be a certain number, you know.
Of course.
Different situations.
Yeah, each art, not, okay, not all arts are, some arts are more difficult than others,
right.
A. B, Some arts are difficult than others, A. And B is that each one requires a different level of, you know. For example, let's say with a golf pro, every person with 6 weeks can hit a 115, okay? Let's say, which is not great, which is a crummy score, but it means he's at least playing golf.
Okay.
Before he's just randomly whacking at things and hoping things happen. You know what I mean? There's no technique at all.
Right. Okay.
And then if he puts another 2 months training, he can whittle it down to 100. But now, for every 10 points, it's going to take much, much longer.
Okay.
To go from a 100 to a 90 could be another 6 months of intense training. And from a 90 to an 80, another 6 months. And from an 80 to a 70, like 2 years. You know what I'm saying? As he gets down to, as he peaks up to excellence, it takes longer. So the same thing is in everything is an art. All right, so let's go on the, all right. So let's see how David's attendance did. So David's, the Narim of David, okay, all right. So the Naval replied to David's servants and said, "Who is David? Who is the son of Yishai? These days the rebellious servants have increased, each against his master. Shall I take from my bread and my water and my meat that I've slaughtered from my shears and give them to men about whose origin I do not know?" All right, so what was Nabal's response? Let's understand Nabal's response. What was his response to David's servants? Should have a car's dough.
You know, recognition of the good he did for him. And here, who are you?
Right.
Yeah.
Worse than that, because he knew that, so it's not clear if he knew that he was a Melech Yisrael, but he knew that he was a prominent person,
yeah.
And at the very least he did. So therefore, the famous phrase, no good deed goes unpunished.
Right.
So number one, he is kafui tova to the highest degree.
What does that mean?
He is negating any good thing. As you said, he's negating any good that David and his army had done for him. He's saying nothing. And two, he is disgracing David. He's saying he's the master, and that David is a slave, and that now the slaves are arrogant toward the masters. So he's totally negating who David is. He's saying he's nothing, and I don't even know him. You know what he's saying? I should give him my bread, my water, my meat, because apparently the custom was at the end of the shearing season that they'd have a big party and they have a big feast for all the shepherds of all the shears. So he completely blew him off. Okay. Now I was going to analyze that. Why couldn't Nabal give him anything? Very important principle here. Why couldn't I say, look, I think, why did he give him something? Because remember, he's got these tables filled with stuff. They're having a big party, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Like a city of all this extra food, you know what I mean? He wouldn't even give him extra food. Why can he do that? Let him give him a crummy. Let him give him some food, you know what I'm saying? He couldn't even give him water. Water? He couldn't even give him water. Not even water. Not even bread, not even nothing. What's the reason for that? You have to go into the mentality of the cheap personality. You have the generous personality. You have the extremely cheap personality. This is the Navi is giving you a insight into the cheap personality of the most extreme manner. What's the shot? I'll give you a hint. It goes back to our principle of the alpha male. If you'll explain that. He views every element of his possessions is a measurement of his empire. Giving it up is giving it to the enemy. Everybody's an enemy. Everybody's an enemy.
The alpha male is selfish.
That is the highest, sure. Because by definition, he's trying to maintain dominance. So therefore, everybody else is a competitor. Therefore, to give him the resources to give money is to give stuff to the enemy. He frees everybody. Not only either they're loyalists, Either they're servants of him, or they're enemies, trying to take away his stuff. You guys like him to give water. Water, nothing. No, he's an enemy. Who is he? Who is David? Who is the son of Ishai? The slave. So that's the most extreme example. The most extreme example. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You don't. That's. Sometimes you have that now. You know, people who are achieved to that degree because they feel like, for example, people who went through the depression are oftentimes prone to that. They can't give even because they are so frightened about the instability of the world. Today you could have money, tomorrow you could be completely destitute. So therefore, to give away something would be, if you put yourself in a vulnerable position, then everything could be wiped out. You know what I'm saying? No, they see the world and they understand that the economic world is very unstable and they can just be wiped out in a second. Which is, now, both, and therefore the way they're going to control that is by keeping everything to themselves. Now the truth is, the economic world is unstable, but there's nothing you can do about it. In other words, the fantasy that like holding all your stuff is going to make a difference. No, it's not, that's not going to, there's no protection. All right, let's go on. Let's see what happens. So David's attendants turned it around to their way, and they went back, arrived and reported to him in accordance with all these words. David said to his men, each man gird his sword. Each man gird his sword, and David too gird his sword. About 400 men went after David, and 200 others stayed with the belongings. Now, that's a very interesting thing. How many people did David take? 400 men. Well, that's an illusion right there. What's the significance of 400 men? Who else took 400 men? The Daka, 400 men. Which famous character in the Chumash took 400 men? Nope. He took 318. Esav is coming with 400 men. Okay? So basically, what is the David going to come to do to Nabal? I'm going to tell you very shortly. What is he planning to do? No. Too nice.
No.
He's going to wipe everybody out. One young man from the attendants told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, behold, David sent messengers from the wilderness to greet our master, and he drove them off. These men were very good to us, and we were not shamed, nor we were lacking anything all the days that we traveled with them. And we were in the field. They were a protective wall over us, both by night and by day, all the days we were with them tending the sheep. And now, be aware and determine what to do. The evil decree has been made final against our master, against the entire household. And he himself is too low a person to even talk to. So one of Nabal's guys got on a horse and ran to Nabal's wife, Abigail, and told her, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? What did he forecast? What did he tell? Houston, there's a problem. What problem did he indicate to Abigail? We're going to be wiped out because Nabal totally blew off David's tent and David, and you're messing with the wrong guy, because he's going to come back with an army, and he's going to. And he says, and he was so good to us. He basically was a complete protective force. We're out in the wilderness. And he came in. Now, why didn't he go to Nabal? Why didn't he go to Nabal and say, "Look, you're making a big mistake"? Why say he couldn't go to Nabal himself? Because Nabal's such a he can't even talk to the guy. In other words, he is so emotionally set in his ways, he could not have any dialogue. It's over. And basically, this guy is such an ass that we are going to, basically, he's endangering us and we're going to get nailed. So basically, he basically came there and told her, we got to press the emergency button here.
He told this to his wife?
He told this to Nabal's wife. He's one of Nabal's workers.
Oh, okay.
So he ran back to the house and told him, we're in big trouble here. Okay. So Abigail hurried, took 200 breads, 2 containers of wine, 5 cooked sheep, 5 saws of toasted grains, 100 raisin clusters, 200 cakes of pressed figs, and she put them on donkeys. She said to her attendants, go ahead of me. Behold, I'm coming behind you. What's her plan? Give who food? Okay, so she wanted to intercept it. She did not tell Nabal, her husband. All right, so she's doing this on her own initiative. Then it happened, as she was riding on the donkey, secretly descending down the mountain. Behold, David and his men were descending the other mountain toward her, and they met. Now, they're coming both down by two mounds, and they meet in the bottom there. There's a encounter. And David had said to his guys, It was for nothing that I guarded all of this man's possessions of the desert, and they were not missing anything from all that belonged to him, and yet he repaid my kindness with evil. Such shall God do to Dove's enemies. Such shall he do further. If I leave over until morning all that belongs to him, so much as a dog. So what did he plan to do? What did Dove plan to do? He's going to wipe everybody out. He's going to kill everybody. He's not going to leave over even a dog. Okay? That's the plan. You see David on, so you see on the right side, you see David, 400 men, ready to wipe out the whole compound. You see donkeys.
Why is he not doing that?
Because he feels that what he did was disgraceful.
Well, I missed that part.
In other words, he and his armies have protected Nabal's sheep and shepherds when they were traveling through the desert. They provide armed guard service. And then when he came in, and when he sent his guys to get some supplies from him, Nabal just blew him off and said, you're a loser, get the hell out of my face.
Then he's going to kill him.
He's going to kill him.
Is that a rational thing?
Okay, that's a good question. Did David do the right thing? Halachically, interesting point. See, all the crimes that David does in the Tanakh, with Bathsheba, is always the same thing. I mean, the Chazal talk about it. It is technically not officer, but philosophically wrong. What do you mean? In other words, there's a principle called Morei B'Malchus, that the king, when a person tells the king to do something, and he does not do that, even he tells him to do something, a very simple activity, stay in your house, and he doesn't, I'm not going to stay in my house. He can have him killed. All right. Any person disobeys the king's command, it's Morei B'Malchus. Okay? Right. So the question, but Sandy, I'm not fully answering your question, because the question is, as you'll see, let's hold that question in abeyance, because was this the best decision?
Was it a dire situation? Were they going to let it die if they didn't get food and supplies from this time?
Well, they certainly needed it. Let's see how Abigail does. Let's see how she handles the situation. Now, what's Abigail's goal here? Before we see what she does.
Build rapport.
But no. See, building rapport is helpful when the person is in a neutral position, not a guy who has a sword and he has 400 men with other swords. Well, how are you going to build rapport there?
Give him food, whatever the hell he wants.
Is that going to be enough? How did he know that he's going to see her and he's just going to chop her head off and her head will just roll down the street? You know, it's not so simple. Just give them the food. And you know, you have it in order. For example, you're talking about strategies in dating when the person is neutral to you. How do you deal with a person who's angry at you? A different strategy. You can't do the same thing. What do you mean by deflect them? How do you deal with a person who's angry at you? I mean, this is a very important life skill. I'm sure you've had that happen before once or twice.
Yeah.
And there are two ways of dealing with that. Successfully and unsuccessfully. Most people are unsuccessful because they simply have no strategy whatsoever. People are unsuccessful in life because they have no strategy about anything. Except how to manage a microwave and maneuver a Pop-Tart in and out. Step one, open the bag. Slip out the pastry out of the bag. Lay on the plate.
They're actually directions.
Yeah, they're walking
directions. They are directions. Right. Press 56. Shut the door. Take out and enjoy. Alright, that's the level of most people's sophistication. But dealing with an angry person is an art in its own right. So good. You're Abigail. What are you going to do now? You're pissing your pants. That's what you were way doing. Because you know you're in, because this guy has an army, and you're a girl with some servants. That you're a woman married to a wealthy guy with some servants. Okay?
She's trying to do the right thing.
Okay, so what is the right thing? I know she can try to do it. What is the right thing?
See that, recognize that he had this emotional...
So it's time to have a little a debate with Dove and Amela? Is that what works? Is that going to be first thing you? Let's debate it. Is that an effective way to deal with the situation?
No, I probably don't. I don't think there's a penalty.
What should she do here?
Appease him.
Appease him. How should she do? What do you recommend she does? Okay, you do the play-by-play. This is the ESPN situation. She's now 100 yards away from Govis. She sees the sun reflecting the glint of his very sharp sword. Okay? What does she do?
She brings all the stuff.
Okay. That's it? Just bring the stuff?
And she tries to explain the situation. Admit
they're wrong.
That these emotional problems and that, you know,
okay, so Sam, admit they're wrong. And how should you admit you're wrong? Okay, that's good. Well, okay, obviously, what's the other choice? You're not talking about, you know, same language. What
you want to say that, you know, you're wrong, like, we were wrong, and,
Do you want to give an explanation?
Probably not.
Okay, rule one, whenever you apologize, you apologize 100%. He wasn't angry at you unless he's done something wrong. Don't go, "I'm wrong, but you have to understand." Da, 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 they'll get more angry. You'll deflate them. You'll take all the energy out by saying, "I want to tell you right now, I was 1,000% wrong. I cannot believe how dumb mistake I made. Please forgive me. There's no excuse. There's nothing. Okay,
that's those Capital One commercials. Ever seen?
Which one? What's in your wallet?
It's like it's like a charging army. What's in your wallet?
Right, and they all somebody's like that. Right, right, exactly. So let's see. All right, so that's good stuff. Let's see how she handles it. Let's see, play by play. All right. All right. So when Abigail saw David, she hurried, dismounted from the donkey, fell on her face before David, prostrate herself on the ground. So she's bound down completely. She fell at his feet and said, "With me, myself, my lord, lies the sin." Bing, 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 bing.
That was saving a lot of trouble in school.
Right. "Let your maidservant please speak in your ears and hear out the words of your maidservant." Okay, what did she just do right there? She did a couple of things. What did she do? You gotta go play by play. The Navi is giving you detail because each element here is significant, is a life lesson in its own right. If you only go into details, I mean, because for example, Moshe goes to Midian and then he shows back up to, then Hashem comes to him in the burning bush. That's 50 years, no mention, not a word. Because basically, for our purposes, those 50 years or 40 years were simply not significant. Okay, here the camera is zooming into Abigail, and you see her. She's on the donkey. Then she falls down. She bows down, and then she gets there, and then she goes right to his feet, and then she says, "With me, myself, my lord, lies the sin. Let your maidservant please speak in your ears. Hear out the words of your maidservant." What is she doing? There's a number of techniques she's doing. One of the techniques, of course, is what Sammy pointed out. Is that she completed, she says, "You're completely wrong. It's a sin. Was it a misunderstanding? Wasn't you wrong also? It's a sin and it's my fault." What else she do?
Complete submissiveness.
Excellent. You're the Gavra. And you demand. You demand, A. B, I am your maidservant. And if you allow me just to say a few words, what's the move she doing? Why is she doing that? She recognizes very clearly that David is in an angry rage, and part of the rage is the fact that he has just been blown off by this insignificant yutz. So therefore, she is now she is demonstrating that, in fact, David, as he really is the man. And I'm a slave. Okay? Same thing that Yaakov does when he encounters his brother Esau. You know, Kotamar La'abdecha. Now, your slave. I'm your first one, your slave. Yehuda, when he encounters Yosef, you are like in my eyes like Paro. I'm your Evet. Okay? Mm-hmm. Completely. I am not a Gavra. I am your slave. I am a tool of your wishes, of your agenda. Now, Let my lord not set your heart against this base man, against Novel, for he is as his name implies. Novel is his name, and revulsion is his trait. And I, your maidservant, did not see my lord's attendants whom you sent. Okay, she does a very slick move here, which you mentioned in passing before. What does she do? In her negotiations here, she makes Novel the straw man. And as you said, he's not even worthy of what? You're all angry, you want to get him. He's not worthy of getting. As you said, he's a retard.
He's so far removed.
He's like a crazy man. You're angry at a crazy man? Right, you can't deal with that.
He's so irrational when it comes to his possessions. You just can't get it out.
And I wasn't there to see your servant. What is she saying? If I was there, I would have hooked you up. So she is deflecting the wrath against him, putting it toward her, and then slowly bringing down the volume. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
What she's doing is genius. She's not done yet. She's not done yet. Oh, you see nothing yet.
Think about it. When you got in trouble in school, I just admitted I was wrong. It would have happened.
Flag. Oh, yeah. Every student.
So true.
Always. No, but still.
At least in the principal's eyes.
Well, you're still right, though. I mean, if you admit that you're wrong, it's very hard to be angry at someone like this.
You can't.
It's
the guy says like this. Ray Rosenthal, I want you to know, I took the kid's keeper and I threw out the window. I did it. It was stupid. I was wrong. I was overcome by
your insanity. Right?
And I did it. I'm wrong. It's my fault. And I'm willing to accept the consequences completely.
Great. Yeah.
Boom. Okay. You're gonna get the least punishment you've ever been. The guy says, "Well, there it is. He was fucking me, everybody." Digging deeper and deeper, and I didn't really always do it first because the other guy
got
a thief to tell me it wasn't only me. He was doing it too, and he just nails himself.
Be angry.
All right.
Very
classic mistake. Every single kid gets in trouble, makes a mistake every time. They think they're helping themselves. No, they're killing themselves. Just a simple, basic rule. So if you mess up and somebody calls you and says you were right, I am wrong, and I'm not wrong. I am completely wrong, and I had a tremendous mistake. It's actually a pasuk in Mishlei. Shlomo Malkin brings it down as a pasuk. Most people can't do that because they're trying to maintain their, they're still annoyed that they have to be
dominated
by the guy. Wrong. Where's her ego here? Where's her sense of self? I'm nothing. She's on the floor. She's on the freaking floor by his feet.
It's not so easy to put your ego aside when you're not in that situation though.
First of all,
for that situation, maybe, but if it's
the opposite, because it's hard. Because you're right, you're first of all, it's very hard to operate this room when she could be petrified because she could be losing her head in 1 second.
I'm talking in a situation where, it's not life or death. It's hard to just be wrong.
Well, that's okay. You're getting towards some of her excellence here. We're going back to the original question. You're starting to uncover parts of the answer. What's the best quality of the woman? You're starting to see it uncovered, only partially. All right, so let's continue on when she goes on. So, now let this gift that your maidservant has brought to my lord, let it be given to the attendants who travel with my lord. So she says, please take this large gift. Please forgive the sin of your maidservant, for Hashem has certainly made for my lord an enduring house, for my lord fights the wars of Hashem, and no blame has been found in you in your days. What is she saying about David and his wars? What is she saying about him and his wars? She's saying that his wars are justified and he should be successful. What is he implying that if he goes ahead with his plan?
This won't be justified.
This won't be justified. So she's intimating, indirectly, speaking to his reality principle, saying like, this is a little bit on the overreaction side. Because if you're really angry, even if Novel was more of a Malchus, then he should kill everybody. You know what I'm saying? So she's speaking to him indirectly. She shouldn't confront that. She says, "You're right. What right do you have to kill everybody? He's a yes. You kill him. Why should I die? I didn't do anything, right? Is that a way to go about doing this? No. indirect, baby, through intimation. A man has risen up to pursue you and seek your life. May my Lord's soul be bound up in the bond of life with Hashem, your God. Before we get from the Yisper, that your Tzura B'Tzura Chaim. And may he hurl away the soul of your enemy as one shoots a stone from a slingshot. Well, what does slingshots of Dove and Melch have to do with each other? Goliath. Right. So she's, what he's saying, I mean, your soul, is, now she's becoming like a rabbi there. She's saying, your soul should be bound up with Hashem. What is she saying? That you will have Olam Haba. And your enemies will, and their soul will be thrown away like a rock. What is that really saying?
Boost an ego.
Right, she's saying...
Machometer.
Right, that's it. And also that you're perfected, because you're going to be with Hashem. And your enemies are going to be thrown away like garbage. Shot away, intimating like Goliath. All right? And it may be that when Hashem performs for my Lord all the good that he has spoken regarding you and appoints you as leader of Israel, that this not be for you a stumbling block and a mortal hindrance for my Lord to have shed innocent blood for my Lord to have avenged himself. And may Hashem act good toward my Lord, and may you then remember your maidservant. So what's her final element there of her thing? And this not be what? As a mortal hindrance, a stumbling block. What is she basically telling? What is she basically in a nice way saying to him? She's doing at least two things, if not more. She's doing what she entails a thing called the assumptive close. You go to a car dealership. You sit into the car. The guy says to you, when you're driving this car, and you feel the great leather seats, you play in the XM radio, I'm telling you, girls are going to be all over you.
You make a great coffee.
You know, when you're out there, my friend, you're tearing up the road. The guy acts
the scene,
as if you already bought the car. It's not like you are gonna buy the car.
Yeah.
That car is yours.
Right. You already bought it.
You already bought it.
Right. Good.
It's called the assumptive close. It's a classic move. She's already assuming that what? The devil's going to do what to her?
Let her off the hook.
Let her off the hook. And then, of course, he wants to avoid this being an act of... He wants to avoid shedding innocent blood. She's already, of course, you don't want it to be a michshol to you, a moral hindrance. Now she's saying, of course you don't want to be a Russia and wipe us all out. And then she says a beautiful thing, is that when everything is good, and when everything is and then Hashem will be good to you, remember your maidservant. 1 second, he's there to chop her head off. She's already acting that of course he's going to become the Malach Yisrael fully, and of course he will be thanking her for the good that she's done to him. And then later on that she'll send something for him. That he will send something to her, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But she acts that it's a foregone conclusion that of course you're not going to kill him. And that of course you would want to do this horrible thing. And not only that, when you maintain your malchus, you are going to reward me.
Right.
So you see, is that unbelievable?
Yes, very good.
So we just to give you a quick update. So basically, she says to David just briefly.
In the outside.
So basically, he says, "You're going to take the gift." I'll read you the that's like 5 6 boom, just very quickly. She says, "So please forgive the sin of your maidservant, for Hashem has really made for my Lord an enduring house, for my Lord fights the words of Hashem, and no blame is found in your days.
Close my door, dude.
A man has risen up to pursue you and seek your life. May my Lord's soul be bound up in the bond of life. With Hashem, your God, may he hurl away the soul of your enemies as one who shoots a stone from a slingshot. And may it be that regarding you, and appoints you as a leader over Israel. And it may not be for you a stumbling block and a mortal hindrance for my Lord to have shed innocent blood for my Lord to have been avenged himself. May Hashem act beneficially to you, my Lord, and may you then remember your maidservant." Well, I pointed out to the guys, there's a number of moves here. In sales, there's a thing called the assumptive close. You walk into a car dealership. You step into the car. You're sitting in the Corvette. And the guy says, as you feel the leather seat, you'll be imagine driving down the highway. You're turning on the FM, the XM radio, and the wind going through your hair. you're going to be tearing up the road. The good salesman will act as if you've already bought the car. Of course you bought the car. Just now telling you all the qualities of your car. That's the move. It's called the assumptive close. It's a classic sales move. You, when Hashem rewards you and you're going to be the Melech of Yisrael, you and Hashem, may Hashem be good for you, and you'll do good to me. Because you, of course, want to avoid shedding innocent blood. She's already acted. He's already made the decision not to kill her. Two, she also intimates that doing so will be a Russia. You are going to be bound up in the bonds of life, for the Perachayim. You're going to have Olam Haba. And your enemies will be shot like a rock in a slingshot, which is a rock that you know that he shot Goliath, who was a Russia. So she's intimating indirectly.
Did he do that already?
Many years ago. He was known. He was a hero. He was a hero in Israel. So she basically intimated to him, not directly, your position of being a Melech Tzedek. Is predicated on you making the right decision here. And that decision is to stand down.
Right. What happened here?
Okay, now you're ready. Now you're poised. Let's see how David... This, by the way, is the greatness... Right now is the greatness of David. The next two psukim. David then sent Abigail, Baruch Hashem Elokei Yisrael, who has sent you this day to meet me. And blessed is your advice. Well, blessed is your intelligence, and blessed is you, who has restrained me from coming to bloodshed and avenging myself by my own hand. Truly as Hashem, God of Israel, lives, that prevented me from harming you. Had you not run and come to meet me, by morning's light there would have been no one remained to Nabal as much as a dog. David then accepted from her what she had brought to him. He said to her, go in peace into your house. See, I have heeded your advice, and I shall show you grace. So that's the greatness of David HaMelech. He makes mistakes, he has emotional issues, they get him out of control. But the same thing when Nasan HaNavi confronted him, he said two words, Hatasi LaHashem. Here, what does she say to her? I am fortunate that you, with your great wisdom, Baruch Tameh, great is your wisdom, that basically saved me from doing a genocide, an atrocity, a holocaust, in my own hands. I'll just tell you the end of the story because it's one of those great moments in the Navi. So then, Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he was having a feast in his house. A feast fit for a king. Nabal's heart was pleased with about himself, and he was very drunk. So she did not tell him anything, major or minor, until the morning's light. And it was in the morning, when Nabal had become sober, his wife told him all these matters. His heart seemed to have died within him, and he was stunned. Now, there's a machlokas among mafarshim. Why was he stunned? One possibility is because he nearly was chopped up into little pieces by David and his army. Or two, is that she's given a huge amount of resources all the way. He was going back to his, he was so cheap, I don't know if we say, with all your money. Because people whose money is more important than their life could be Nabal. She gave away the store. She basically opened up the storehouse of stuff and unloaded, packed it up in like trucks, donkeys, and gave it to Nabal. So he's like shocked. Here we go. It happened after 10 days that Hashem struck Nabal and he died. When David had heard that Nabal had died, he said, Baruch Hashem, who has taken up the cause of my disgrace.
From the... That's great. Baruch Hashem.
That's it.
We'll hear that today.
Wait, what happened to Nabal?
Nabal died. Hashem killed him. Because he was...
David said Baruch Hashem.
Said, Baruch Hashem, who has taken up the cause of my disgrace from the hand of Nabal and prevented his servant from wrongdoing. Hashem has returned Nabal's evil upon his head. Then listen to the next move. What do you think David does next?
And he gives something back to the woman, shows her some gratitude.
David sent agents and spoke regarding Abigail to take her to himself as a wife. Okay? David's servants come to Abigail to Carmel, spoke to her, saying, David has sent us to you to take you for himself as a wife. She arose and bowed down to the ground and said, Your maid servant is merely a handmaid to wash the feet of the servant of my lord. Abigail then hurried, arose, mounted the donkey with her five maids traveling with her, and she followed David's messengers and became his wife. David also married Abinoam of Israel. Both of them were his wives. Shaul had given his daughter... Okay, that's
Abinoam was Abigail, or...
Nope, another wife. The question why. All right, so that's why they both became wives. Okay, so that's... But a couple of ideas here. Let's go revisit the original question.
Sam
again.
It's not very relevant question.
Yeah. Well, all right.
I feel like these guys are like so many wives, like a lot of single guys.
Well, he's the only he's allowed to have a melech. The only person that has a restriction on wives is a melech. You can have as many wives as you want.
Right.
The male can only have 18.
If a guy has like 30 wives, then are there more women than men?
No, but y'all slow down. In order to have, first of all, we accepted the minhag of the gzeira of Rabbeinu Gershom not to have more than one wife since the year 1000. Let's say halakhically you can't take on wife number two, provide you have to provide all of her material needs, food, clothing, shelter, sexual relations. You can't have a second wife you can afford it. So it's very, people didn't have more than one or two wives. People are not going to have 80 wives.
Very
There's an isser to have more than 18.
Oh, for the kings they are.
Yeah, it's an isser. You can have as many as you want.
I thought the kings though did have like...
One person had, who's the one who had, who violated that isser? Well, no. Had 300 wives and 600 concubines. And the pasuk says that he violated this, right? And that was the downfall of the whole Malchus Yisroel.
Just a bit over 18.
So the whole—that's another story, exactly.
Pretty amazing.
We can go. There's another topic. In other words,
18 examples.
How could women ruin the greatest chacham? How can women ruin the greatest chacham ever walked the earth? Brought him down. That's a study in its own right. Not so simple.
Also, he was also much older in life at that point, right?
Yes, he was.
Also.
Okay. So that's worthy of an Anna. How women could do, how women brought down the greatest product in the world, the greatest chacham in the world. All right. Well, it's not so simple. Not so simple.
Because
you could say how women brought down the average jerk.
Right.
We're not talking about chacham here.
Right.
Not so simple. Wasn't so simple with him. Huh. Some of the guy who wrote Mishlei, Koheles, and Shir HaShirim, you're not talking about a different caliber of individual.
Sure.
It was not so simple. Mm-hmm. And a person who was, and you see from Mishlei, whose understanding of psychology was we don't have that level of understanding.
Right, up and down.
Not so simple. It's not so simple. We can sit there and say, of course. No, not so simple. That's worthy of an of it's not so simple. There's a whole very careful analysis of how that actually occurred. It wasn't 1 second. Like nothing of major. It was a develop. It was a whole process. It was very gradual. How do you find yourself in that situation? There's a whole step by step thing. So we can investigate if you want. How women brought the greatest chacham down.
That is crazy.
It is the Amos, baby.
It'll be 1 week we should,
We can do that, sure. But let me go back to our question I started with. I mean, I don't want to be guilty of avoiding the question.
Sure.
The question I started off with, what is the quality of excellence that a guy would want in a woman? Beyond the basic prerequisites, okay? What do you see from the story? What was her excellence?
Psychological presence.
Psychological presence? What do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
What was her excellence? What was her? What do you see stepping back from the story and seeing her moves?
Communication skills. Knowing how to deal with people. Understanding basic psychological principles to implement manipulative ideas.
Those are all symptoms.
Knowing how to handle.
Those are all results. You're saying that those are all results. What was really her greatness? You're saying it's true. Those are all symptoms.
Emotional perfection.
But in a very
understanding another person's emotions.
Let me put it this way: the Navi does not talk about her before, and the Navi does not talk about her after. This is her only part on the stage of the Tanakh. This is it. She gets her one parak, and she's off.
She's able to.
This exemplifies her, and not only that. Why do I even have to know there was a Navi Gal in the world? Who cares? Who cares? Why do I need to know about her? There are many people that the Tanakh does not talk about. They were born, they lived, they died. You don't know about them. Not important, right? Apparently, the fact that the Navi, in this case Shmuel, crafted whoever was the next Navi who wrote it. Felt that it was critical for us to see about her. Well, it's two things. Really, we need to see her because we need to see this is the development of David HaMelech into the Melchus realm. But a lot of time spent on her also. She's so great of a Chacham, Rashi counts as one of the seven Nevi'ot.
I like that.
That's another good question.
That's good.
Okay, that's a good question. How does a woman so good end it with such a yetz? All right, and you're going to go through life, and you're going to see that you're going to ask that question more than just tonight. There are many people who fall in that category. I have two possibilities for you on that one.
Two.
Okay. First of all, it says he was from Beit Kalev. So Kalev is one of the 12 spies that stood up. So further, he came from a family of good yichus. It could well be that her father, saying, "Oh, it's a good family," set her up at a very young age. The family got a good track record, but as we know by all things, past performance is no indicator of future results. Mm-hmm. All right, so the bottom is, it was a good fund, it turned sour. Possibility number one. Okay? Could be also that he was a good guy, but what brought him, he was not born with the name Naval. Nobody calls their kid, disgusting, disgraced, disgraceful person. Okay, nobody calls person, disgrace. When did that come out?
It would be when he started gaining it.
When he became rich. And that's a very common phenomenon. See, when a guy is making $52,000 a year, his life is very much, his economic life is very determined. He basically has enough money to cover this, that, his basic things, and he's still $1,000 short. All right? So he may have crazy emotions, but there's no expression of them because he has no way to express them. What does money do? Money gives you choices. And the best things, and generally, is much easier to make money than to be a chacham with money. The best example, I think I mentioned it maybe once or twice, is it's a great, if you can check out from the library, there's a couple books on studying the lottery winners. And it will be the most depressing stories. Most lottery winners who became divorced, drunks, drug addicts, and dead.
I think someone played you on lottery.
Yeah. Okay. And the bottom line is that for most people, the money can be a bracha, but for most people, in my experience, money is a kloa. Because they didn't get the chachma to be able to navigate with that. And often, most of them actually lose it within 4 years. They're bankrupt within 3-4 years.
Lottery winners.
Getting $300 million wired into your account is not always so healthy. The person says, "Oh, if I was them, I'd be different." Okay? No. Don't assume you're going to be different. Assume you're going to be like everybody else. And that's always the best assumption. You know what I'm saying? Money is a great bracha. But you've got to have the chachma to be able to handle the bracha. And most people, when they get the bracha, it's a disaster. Disaster. So, Naval had some imperfections. Once the money, he had the 3,000 sheep and he had the 1,000 goats. Became this major player, mega-tunal guy. It brought out the nuttiness. And therefore, she was stuck with what's she going to do? She's married to this yutz. She's stuck.
Good problem.
Yeah, all you said about the money was that the process of how to corrupt somebody because they have choices. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
That's a whole share in its own right. That's another thing. How does that's something we can really, that's a separate discussion. How does getting wealth generally end up being a bad situation? I'm giving sort of the outline of that, because there's going to be, you are overwhelmed with opportunities, okay? And since most people are instinctual, they're going to make instinctual decisions, which will, by definition, will ruin them. They're going to go down to Atlantic City, they're going to get three hookers, they're going to get drunk, they're going to get the money stolen from them, happens to many lotto winners, they're going to get some venereal disease, I mean, all kinds of, every stupid thing that can happen, they'll happen to them. They'll get into fights, they'll be subjected to all kinds of aggressive people who want to take their money from them. They'll be subject to confidence men, people trying to steal from them. They're going to be subject to all kinds of attacks that they're really not really able to handle. I'm just giving you an outline. There's much more detail, each step by step. You can go through very careful analysis.
Sorry, you're talking about the lottery winners here.
By, example. But there's other kinds of, wealth. I can inherit money. A person could just get lucky on the market. There's so many kinds of situations where a person suddenly comes himself into amazing wealth. Okay, and being in my journey of 10 years in wealthy Jewish New York, it's just...
Are you distinguishing between people that come into the money on one hand or people have earned it, or it's the same thing? I know there's some differences.
There are differences. The people who buy a lottery ticket one day and win $350 million the next day are the most unprepared. Those who gain wealth slowly in a more natural, organic manner are a little bit better, but you see, it's not immune to it.
Right.
They may not have the most extreme things happen to them, but there's lots of tariffs happen. I mean, I can we can talk about that another time. It's another interesting thing on money works.
Just to throw out an idea that I don't know if it plays into this, but something that actually Rabbi Chait had said on the Haman tape. About Haman. Okay, you want to say
anything? No, you're just like, he was in a state of... I think they call him like a muhan or something, right? He was like in a state of like preparedness.
Right, exactly.
And then like once he like became a guy with a lot of money, then he was able to express his...
nuttiness, right.
Yeah.
Therefore, guys like you're a gaiva, you're an egomaniac, but you don't have any time, you don't have any way to express it, because there are no
gratification activities.
Yeah, because there's nothing to substantiate the fact that...
You demand.
Right.
Right. You're sitting in your...
low life, making the $20,000 a year. Now suddenly you're making $1 million a year. So now you're walking around like, so now you're the ego.
Right.
So I mean, just
right. Right. So that could have happened to a novel. That could be a possible how novel became a novel.
Right.
But taking to the hero of our story of Avi Gael is the essence, and I could demonstrate really throughout all of Tanakh, the heroine, the greatest heroines of the entire Tanakh always have the same quality. What is that? When their husband is under a cloud of some emotion, their bini yisera, their extremely keen psychological sense kicks in, sizes up the situation in a way that the husband, no matter how great is, does not realize, works out the developmentally therapeutic way to negotiate out of this problem. That's the principle. Let's apply here. Abigail sees that she's going to end up being dead meat. She's going to encounter a good guy, a righteous guy, who's now enraged. So she has to sort of turn him around, take him down out of his anger, and gently and carefully allow him to see the emiss of the situation. And we want the 15 steps, how she does that, step by step. She falls down to the ground. She says, the sin is with me. You know what I'm saying? She emotionally engages him, neutralizes him, and in an indirect way opens the path for his mind to see the situation without giving him mussar, confronting him and trying to show him that he's a big ass. You know what I'm saying? It's a very and in a very stressful situation. You know what I'm saying? Esther Amalka, she has to save the Jewish people.
Right.
She calls Haman and Ahasuerus into wine party A. She brings up the tension, the intrigue, the suspense. Let's get together tomorrow night. Lashkaka helps her, of course. And then she works out that even though that Ahasuerus is the one who signed off on the edict to destroy all Jews, she's able to psychologically put it all on Haman. She's able to see the situation up, understand her husband has, you know, crazy emotions, or has lost some certain emotions, and able to work within his emotional universe and help him do the right thing. Avram loves his son Yishmael. Sarah says, you've got to get rid of her, him, Yishmael, and his mother. And the thing was very Vayiraha Davar Beinei Aladoth Beno. It was very painful for Avram to accept that concerning his son, Aladoth Beno, on account of his son. So he had a connection to his son. He was promised he's going to carry on the Masorah. He's an old dude. He's 86 years old. He finally has a son. You know, he's nearly 99 years old. And she's telling him to throw him out like garbage. You know what I mean? And then she's crazy. So he couldn't accept the fact that Yishmael was in fact a threat to the Masorah. Because basically he was teasing Yitzchak in a way that only Sarah perceived that Yishmael saw that he wanted to be the alpha male of the family, the beloved child, the pastor on the Masorah, and wouldn't tolerate little Yitzchak being the man. So therefore, them being old, Sar recognized if we don't distance Yishmael out of the picture, then when we're dead, he will kill Yitzchak and take the mantle of the family. She perceived this. Avram did not. I mean, there's examples. Rivka saw the same blindness of Yitzchak and got the bracha to Yaakov. Fast forwarding. You see Miriam recognize that the Jewish people are going to be destroyed by their parents willfully not living with each other due to the edict of Paro. She convinced them to get together. They have Moshe. The Moshe Yisrael is born. Moshe is walking down to Mitzrayim and does not do Bris Mila. Hashem is about to kill him. Tzipora does Bris Mila and saves him. Again and again and again. One common denominator. The Bini Yisera, the quality of being tremendously psychologically astute, recognizing when the husband is lost in a particular emotion, and does the therapeutic move to save him, or in these cases, the entire Jewish people. That's the best quality of a woman. So when you said the word to grow together, it's true, but let's put some teeth into that definition. To be able to identify a person, when a guy can get lost in certain kind of craziness, because it's a natural thing, and able to resurrect the guy from destroying himself. And that's called the Azer Kenegdo. That's an Azer helper, Kenegdo, opposite him. Therefore, she's a point, counterpoint. That's what you're looking for.
Okay, practically speaking, I don't know anything.
Where a person is in that situation that could bear it out.
Excellent question. Okay. Not everybody is going to be confronted in life where the entire balance of the Jewish people is in the offing. Obviously not. We're talking about the extreme case. However, it's not true. But there is, all these qualities are subject to degree.
Yeah.
Okay. It's in ours again. Don't let excellence be the enemy of the good. If I can't have the best, I don't want anything. You want a woman who has that to the highest degree. You can find out if a girl is psychologically astute. First of all, most women are given a Bini Yisera. Have that sense, because they live in the world of relationships. Therefore, they can pick up cues that guys who are not living in the world of relationships as much don't catch.
mean to live in the world?
Their whole definition of self-worth is through relationships, much more than guys. Guys' definition, if we go to the alpha male, is through dominance of insofar as possessions and extraneous things, money, power. They are looking for a term to be loved, to be loved and heralded as being great among all these relationships. Therefore, it's very important for a woman to figure out, how do I know whether the person feels? So all the nonverbal cues and communications, they're great at. Okay?
That's amazing.
So that's the being a favor. That's the extra knowledge they have. Now, of course, you know, a woman who is going, as you say, going back to the world of growth, is going to be honest with you to realize where you are. And there's two things. Honest, you know, perceptive, but able to share that information, not in a way that's going to make you defensive. You understand? Yeah, in other words, a person could, it's very easy, it's always easy for any person to identify limitations or lacks in other people.
Right.
Okay. Now, how do you get the information across to the other person?
Right.
Very hard. In a way that they'll hear you. You can't tell a person, well, you have these emotions, and that's it. If you get it on, you're being totally governed by them. Even if you could figure that out and you tell the guy, he can't hear it.
Because they're caught in emotion.
Because they're caught in emotion. So what she did was, she didn't stop this. This is justice? You're going to butcher me and everybody else who had nothing to do with this? That's fair? You call yourself a knowledge pro? She didn't do that. Holding her throat. She didn't get a muster. She did in a way, in a backhand, indirect, developmentally, emotionally satisfying way. That's for greatness. You know what I'm saying? That's an age of health. So they're, you know, they're, so that quality is, so you're looking for, when you said, are you looking for a smart girl? Well, you're looking for a smart girl in the sense that a woman who is not a person who got a 2400 on the SAT, that's not, that academic knowledge is what we're not talking about. We're talking about a knowledge, a perceptive knowledge, and is interested in using that knowledge to better herself and others and her husband. It doesn't do with how many block of Mars she learned. It has nothing to do with that. You know what I'm saying? I don't think Avigail, well, we know for sure she didn't learn any block of Mars, but I'm saying, you know what I'm saying? It's not a book knowledge.
Right.
It's a value-based knowledge. It's a psychological sensitivity knowledge. Right. So obviously, I'm just saying, if you shop around, they're going to have more of that or less of that, and you'll be able to discern that.
But even if she, just to clarify the point, so even if she's psychologically astute, it doesn't necessarily mean that. Does that necessarily mean she's going to be a good point counterpoint person? How do you know that?
No, because it's two. There are two things. One is the ability to perceive the limitation, or just to perceive the problem. That's one thing. Okay. Right. That's one thing. Even more, the greater talent is to be able to communicate in a way that the male can hear it.
How do you know that she's going to be that? You know that she'll.
You can see how she talks to other people. You can see how does she deal with situation? Does she have a chachma in human relations? Well, you can see that.
Well,
does she? In other words, when people get angry at her, when people get in, is she able to navigate through difficult situations with a grace and a diplomatic sense? Does she have a real? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But so let's say she has like a diplomatic sense. You know, able, like she's good at like relationships.
Okay.
I mean,
well, she has to be bought in, going to your earlier point, which I didn't disagree with you per se. She has to be interested in that life is about. Now, she has to agree with you on the basic rule. What is life about? Life is about human perfection, not just you know, how can we distract ourselves from our life with trying to find false euphoria and shopping and all that other stuff.
Even if she's psychologically astute, but she's within that world,
but then it's not going to help.
World of
stupidity.
If stupidity, then you
right.
Say
so. I mean, she has everything. She's got a lot of, you know, woman, you have the prerequisites, and she's got the same, you know, goals, and you know, like you're saying, assuming she's a psychologically astute, she's going to kill many relationships.
Who is she? I think she's like she.
Yeah, that's good. I'm saying, yeah, the fact, my point that I want to make tonight is very simple, is that the Tanakh identifies the same quality amongst all the great women and things. That is the measure of the great woman. So obviously you want to marry the great woman. That's the mark of the great woman. That is a great mark of all great women of all Tanakh, without exception. That's how they talk about it. Talking about the situation where the man basically fails. When a man fails, will they be there in the breach? Is the question. Like Russ, she goes in there to the shed to she does a dramatic. Because she had another problem. Because Boaz wasn't taking responsibility. Her relatives are need him, and they're able to work out a situation where both her mother-in-law and Naomi is financially taken care of, A. And B, how she is going to be married off into a proper family. Okay? And she had to go into the shed, and she had to uncover her feet, and she had to sleep there, and she had to have a whole conversation with the guy in the dark there, and this and that. The whole kind of move. When the chips are down, does she have the inner core to see what the goal is and to effectively, strategically, emotionally, sensitively get the job done? That's the question. That's excellence. Now, like everything else, so when you're looking around, you have to find somebody. In other words, that's what the prophet says. The prophet says, beautiful. So what's the, in fact? You really have the description of the best woman. Yeah, the woman is. What do they call her? Calls her Tovat Seichel Yifat Toar, of great intelligence and beautiful. But the first thing you mentioned about is Tovat Seichel. You want that. He even says, David says, Baruch Tamesh, great is your logic, your reasoning, your advice, He recognized, he understood what she had done to him. And he was not defensive, that's his greatness. You know what I'm saying?
Right, I hear you.
He didn't get defensive.
Well, what about the girl's non-faith organization?
Well, that's a lack.
Why is that a lack?
Well, is she going to be a good mother? You can understand the dynamics of her children, how to...
but a person could have good dynamics, but they just don't want to socialize or something.
I don't mean by pure... I'm not talking about socializing. I'm not talking about their... I'm not dealing with the issue, are they a person who is interested in socializing, not interested in socializing? Do they both... First of all, are able to assess the situation, what the situation needs, and able to let's say, create shalom? Is a better way of expressing it. I'm not the one who's trying to marry the best networker, because she's an insane person. Why is she's trying to build a empire of relationships where she's heralded as being the most popular girl? She's an alpha male, she's an alpha female. So what good is that? She's as nutty as a guy who's in the office 20 hours a day. This is a female version of the nuttiness. So why is that a value? She's safe. Well, she sees dynamics, she understands the kid, she has kids. They're different. She relates to them properly. She doesn't get flustered by their different issues. There's a lot of expression for that that's properly expressed. That's the realm you're looking for. And as much as you can get, you get. If anything else. But most people don't even know what to look for. Much less, that's it. It's sort of like, pulling something out of the hat. And most relationships, even the modern world, were up to 30% divorce rate anyways.
Well, what did you say?
In the modern Orthodox world, we're probably up to 25-30% divorce rate already.
What was it like?
About 5 years ago, I think we were closer to 18%. Building. Well, as we become more assimilated into America, right. We have all the same, all of what they call Tachlui Mitzrayim, all of the defects of Mitzrayim are going to affect us. And they are.
Right.
So as we become more American, we're going to have all the same qualities of America, which are a 50% divorce rate. So we're at 30%. Yeah, sure.
It's 50%?
Yeah.
We're at,
25% to 30, depends, yeah.
So, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Sure.
It was less.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not going down. But as it becomes more accepted to divorce, as it becomes less of a shanda,
You don't want to be a man out, and you
won't get
a divorce, or else.
The trending thing,
does it? No, which means like this. Where people would have the motivation to work it out, you're like, well, forget it. I don't need this. I'm not going to spend any effort to salvage what could be salvaged. Something can salvage. Something the best thing is a divorce. I'm not against divorce. The Torah has divorce for reasons, but it should be, the point of, should be the last. First of all, it's devastating. It's a disaster. If you have kids, it's bad.
Huh.
There are, all kids are messed up by that, essentially, most of them.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And because it never ends, you never have a relationship with them. The person's always going to be involved because they are going to be the mother of your children. So they're always going to be involved in your life, assuming you have children. I mean, if you get married and get divorced quickly, not as much. But if you get married, have children, then get divorced, then it's bad news.
Also, I think that if you end up as a child siding with one of the parents,
bad.
So then you're going to ultimately have tremendous guilt that you.
What about if you don't side with one of the
parents? It's impossible.
You're saying it's impossible.
Whatever, you're always torn. I mean, you mean really
one kid unconsciously will favor one side of both the other.
Right. First of all, you feel anger against both. First of all, you feel like a loser because you feel
turn
like
inwards too.
Right. First of all, many children feel the sense that they're the cause. If I was somehow more perfect, my parents wouldn't have broken up. So there's a lot of guilt that the child has that they are somehow the cause of this divorce. B, there's anger against one or either both parties that they ruined the situation. If my mother was more understanding, more blah blah, or my dad was more blah blah blah, we still, so it's always stuck with tremendous emotional source. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Hi, Laura.
Less and less as time goes on, less and less.
Women, even if the guy's like 25, you know, still have an effect.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Sure.
You mean if they're
even if the guy's 25, he's got a wife and two kids of his own.
Well, it's less than the kids when the kid's 14.
Right, but he's still gonna have an effect even though
sure.
he's 25.
Sure.
Really.
You never are not the child of your parents. Even after the parents are dead, you're still the child of your parents.
But if you can work it out psychologically, you
know. Okay, fine. If your last name is Avinio and your first name is Avram, fine. But if it ain't happening.
What kind of person
should do?
Look at a situation.
I can't come up there now.
Would you say that it's possible for a person to look at the situation and rationally work it out?
You might be able to
accept the fact that they can be okay.
Yes.
And
but it's going to be a very stress.
You become more conscious
of
where it's coming from.
It's a stress. It's a very big stress. Because it's a big stress.
What's the best thing to do?
Well, I'm pointing that. That's why you want to get it right the first time. The only thing is you want to screw up a divorce situation. It's a big stress.
Let me get married.
No, that's not an option either. That's not good. That's not being what? Being the 40-year-old single guy? That's not good.
40-year-old virgin?
Right. That's not a good place to be in. You'd rather be the 40-year-old divorced guy than the 40-year-old single guy.
Yeah.
For sure. All right, guys. Go ahead.
Thank you. By the way, so there was a topic that you had mentioned the other week.
I don't remember.
Did somebody remind him?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
What was the thing with the self-image or something thing?
Oh, yeah. So how to attain ayin yofa?
Ayin yofa?
Well, the opposite is ayin hara, is being involved constantly, feeling stressed out because you're trying to maintain yourself in the competitive world.
Can't leave that up there alone.
Versus a guy who's indifferent to the competitive world.
He's
in the own world.
Yeah. Come on.
How to get in the role of Ayin Yafa?
That's a good
question. I forgot about it. I have to spend some time to put that all together.
Okay, that's good. That's really the basic thing you're saying about the divorced parents. I mean,
most of the kids that I saw had SARS in school were prior to divorce. Invariably.
Either there's tremendous anger against both parents, or he's siding with one against the other.
It's a big chunk of emotions.
Yeah.
It's a big chunk of emotions. None of them good.
So would it be a negative thing to marry a child that's a product of a divorce?
Because
you know they have like certain
definitely a lack, but you have
really?
To look. Yeah. On average. All things being equal, for sure. I mean, you have to assess it. In each situation, you have to assess. That means that they have some challenges they have to overcome. It's not so simple. You know what I'm saying? It's not in order. They have additional obstacles to overcome. Doesn't mean they can. Doesn't mean they can. Doesn't mean they have not. But it's something that's a stress.
That's good.